We support chaos on this show because chaos is great for content.
Yes.
So we're kind of hoping that Zion Williamson says either I'm going back to Duke or I'm just not going to New Orleans. Not going to happen. Find a way to get me out of there, or I'll go back to college if I have to.
I totally respect that Eric Lindros type decision. You've got one career, maybe 10 years if you're lucky. Go where you want to play.
Maybe here's, that's a Jerry After Dark question.
It could be. Here's Brian Windhorst from ESPN. Brian, what are the chances Zion hooks us up with chaos here and doesn't end up in New Orleans?
I don't know. The difficult thing with reading him is he's not been very vocal. He didn't seem like he was thrilled with the results last night. And the big challenge here is he hasn't signed with an agent. You know, typically in a scenario like this, the agent would do the speaking for him. And, you know, on one hand, he hasn't signed with an agent, so we don't know. On the other hand, he hasn't signed with an agent, so all of his opportunities are going back, are open. I don't quite understand why he hasn't done a shoe deal yet. You know, typically, even though we're in a, you know, yeah, even though we're in a very global market, you're better off in a big market with a shoe deal than in a small market. So if you don't know where you're going, typically you do the deal before the lottery. You know, LeBron sort of pioneered that almost 20 years ago. I was very surprised he hadn't done it. I mean, the ideal time to do a shoe deal for him would have been in the commercial when New York and L.A. were on the board, you know, and they were, you know, with the finalists. But I'm a little bit unclear with the way he's chosen to go about this so far. So it's a difficult read for me. You know, he's a Southern kid. You know, he's his high school class, I think, was 30 kids. You know, his family's been very protective of him. We don't know a lot about him, so it's difficult to read. But you know, there would be some people in the situation who would try to make a power play, but I don't know enough about him to be sure.
What kind of a different, like, how different is his life going to be? I mean, I know Tim Duncan was kind of not a flashy guy, but he was in San Antonio for the longest time, and you never really saw that many Tim Duncan commercials. How different is this going to be for this kid? New Orleans, like, he must have been sitting there thinking, I'm going to take the Knicks back to the promised land, and now he's in New Orleans. Like, just shoe deals, endorsements, all of it.
It depends on what his priority is. I mean, for most kids who have uncertainty, you know, he's not a millionaire yet. He's going to be a millionaire, but he's not a millionaire yet. And I would think that just about everything that is going on in his mind right now would relate to his shoe deal, because the shoe deal is everything. He's going to be potentially tens and tens of millions, maybe in excess of $50 million. And that shoe deal is so important because that protects you against everything. That buys you the ability to make other decisions. It protects you and your family for the rest of your life before you even get drafted. And so to me, the shoe deal is everything. And if the shoe deal is everything, your market is everything. And so especially since they have now let this lottery happen before the shoe deal, it's a mystery. But I don't know him well enough to be able to say, oh, yeah, this is what's most important to him, and he'll do A, B, or C. And that's what's causing everybody pause right now, is the uncertainty.
We have Brian Windhorst of ESPN. Now we know the Knicks will pick third. The Lakers moved way up. They've got the fourth pick. The belief is both teams have an appetite for acquiring Anthony Davis. Now that we know where they stand on the draft board of those two teams, the Knicks and the Lakers, who do you think has a better shot at getting Anthony Davis?
Well, I would never say never, but I don't think the Lakers have a good chance at all. I just don't think that the Pelicans want to make a deal with LA. If they had a really super compelling asset, like a great young player or the number one pick, maybe they could change their minds, but they don't have the number one pick. And even worse for LA, New Orleans has it. You know, they can't even offer them an improved draft pick. Meanwhile, I talked to scouts. I'm not a college basketball guy, so I'm not going to rely on my opinion. But I talk to scouts, and they tell me that the draft breaks at 3. You want to be in the top 3. After that, there's a slide. So even though the Lakers did very well and moved up, and they will probably be able to get a good guy who can be a solid piece going forward, that pick has less value, whether it's true or not. The perceived value of 4 versus 3 is pretty significant. And I actually think it was a great night for New York. It wasn't the greatest night of all time. They didn't get Zion, but not only did they get a better pick than the Lakers, and they are in position to make a better offer, in my opinion, but Boston, the other team that would be involved in a bidding war for Anthony Davis, had their trade package worsened. And people are not paying attention to this. That Memphis pick could have gone to Boston, but because it moved up to number two, it does not go to Boston. And so that's one less piece of ammunition that the Celtics have to offer in a package for Anthony Davis. So, you know, all the signals coming out of New Orleans are that the Pelicans are not yet convinced that they're going to move him. But if and when they reach that position, I think New York's got a really compelling offer.
Ryan, this is one of the last times we're going to be able to ask you about the Kawhi remaining in Toronto. I think the fan base is, I think they're kind of tricking themselves into believing that the farther they go, the better opportunity that there's going to be, or the better chance that he does stay. Yeah, what's the latest on that?
Where's the hypnosis to get inside Kawhi's head?
So it's just nobody knows.
I'd love to give you an answer that would sound great. It would make me sound really smart, but sometimes you just say you don't know, you know. And the one thing I'll say about it is, he's really not, as far as I know, he's not really talking to outside his very close inner circle. So I would almost at this point, unless it comes from him or his uncle slash agent, I would almost completely disregard it and enjoy this opportunity. I know that it's difficult. Trust me, as somebody who's trailed LeBron for a lot of his career, I can understand why it's hard to lose sight of the moment. But I have to, this is what I said to fans in Cleveland last year. I said it to fans in Miami before that. Enjoy this. Stop worrying about what's going to happen in the future and enjoy the moment that's ahead of you.
Well, people certainly were on Sunday night. It was a remarkable game for Kawhi, and, you know, biggest shot in franchise history. First time there's been a walk-off on a Game 7 moment like that in NBA history. And now they set their sights on Milwaukee, and the Bucks have been the most consistent team in the NBA all year. You know, they've cruised through two rounds here. They've only lost once. But I understand why they're a favorite. They should be a favorite, but I don't think this is David versus Goliath. You know, I think the Raptors have a real shot here. How do you feel about their chances?
Absolutely. I think a real big point for tonight, but really those first two games in Milwaukee, is the Raptors need to try to make it a six-minute game. And I know that this isn't something that you think of when you think you have a power team, but somehow keep the game within striking distance into the fourth quarter, because once the game gets late, I think it swings towards the Raptors' advantage. They have great half-court defenders, and they have a better half-court shot maker. Giannis is a tour de force that he is not a half-court shot maker. He really, really relies on up-tempo, getting down the court, and the game slows down. And so, you know, one of the things that people were criticizing the Raptors for was that nobody else was shooting at the end of that game on Sunday. Okay, fair, but guess what was happening? They were defending their behinds off. They were really causing Philly a lot of problems. So I think Milwaukee's greatest weakness is their ability to execute under pressure in the half court. If you can make it that kind of game, at least on the road, that's what you're looking to do, and you're just looking to steal one of the two. I agree Milwaukee's looked great. I agree that they're the favorites for a reason, but I'll also point out that their first two rounds were cupcakes. They played Detroit without Blake Griffin. He was dragging his leg up the court. The series ended, and he had surgery like 15 minutes later. And then in the second round, they played a team that was imploding in on itself in Boston. So they have not seen a team like the Raptors, and I expect it to be highly competitive.
Well, and an interesting angle here is the Mike Budenholzer angle, where it's believed that was Masai's guy. Like, that's who he was hoping to target. And Budenholzer said, no dice, I'm off the Milwaukee. And he ends up going with Nick Nurse. And Nick Nurse has worked out fine. You know, Nurse has handled the moment very well.
I think they could say that they both have.
I think they both have, exactly. And I guess this is probably a big moment for Budenholzer. I mean, this is why I think he could have had the job in Toronto.
He was the first guy reported.
Absolutely. I think he could have had him.
Well,
here,
remember, I think it's important to realize when Bud left that, remember, he didn't get fired in Atlanta. He asked to come out of his contract. And I think he wanted the Milwaukee job. They even had discussions about doing a trade where Atlanta would get compensation. Milwaukee was not in the mood for doing that. Remember, they had done that before. They traded for Jason Kidd. You may forget that, but they traded for Jason Kidd. And Milwaukee ended up not doing it, but he asked out of his contract with the intention of going to Milwaukee. I think he interviewed in Toronto because I think it was a really good job. and I think he also wanted to cover all his bases. But I think he had his eyes on Milwaukee all the way. I don't think it was an apples-to-apples situation, and with good reason. I think he looked at Milwaukee, saw a megastar player. Remember, they didn't have, you know, Kawhi yet,
right.
I'm fairly certain.
No, they didn't.
And, you know, they didn't have Kawhi yet, and he saw a team that he felt had underachieved, that it wouldn't take as big of a deal to turn them around, that he was correct. But, you know, Bud has had issues in the past with delivering in the postseason. You know, he had a 60-win team that ran up against Cleveland and got swept out, and he really has never gotten past that. He's never gotten back to that height, so... We'll see, but I think Masai feels pretty good with the way the coaching situation went. In all honesty, I don't see any regrets that Masai would have in this season.
No,
no matter what happens with Kawhi, I don't think you can say, well, if they had just done A, B, or C, he might have done differently. I think Nick has done a good job. I think their transactions during the season have been good. I think they're in a great position. That's all you can ask for.
Great stuff, Brian. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Here's Brian Windhorst of ESPN.